Welcome to the Natural Health 365 podcast, natural solutions for everyday problems. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit naturalhealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Landsman.
Our show today, The Wireless Grid, Myths and Dangers Exposed. Our guest is a longtime Washington, D.C. attorney and consumer rights advocate, beginning his career as one of Ralph Nader's Raiders. In the 1960s, he wrote the influential and best-selling expose of the food industry called The Chemical Feast. As chairman of the National Institute of Science, Law, and Public Policy, and publisher of the landmark white paper, Getting Smarter About the Smart Grid, our guest clearly outlines an activist approach to the problem at hand of dysfunction in the energy and electricity sector. Are we being misled by the energy industry? Will a wireless grid of energy consumption really be better for the planet and save us money? These questions, plus much more, are the focus of this program. Please join me in welcoming Jim Turner to our show. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
I want to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. For more information about Jim Turner, please visit citizens.org. Jim, let's start off the program with talking about local, state, and federal government agencies. They seem to be very excited about this so-called smart grid, which includes putting a digital radiation pulsing surveillance device on every single home and business. Are they being misled by all of this?
They are being misled. In fact, we would not be in the situation we are in if it weren't for the stimulus program that started in 2009 to bail us out of the financial collapse. The government that took over sat there and said we need to have what they called shovel-ready projects to spend billions of dollars on in order to get the economy going again or to keep it from tanking completely. And one of those shovel-ready projects was putting smart meters on houses across America. The program of smart meters on houses in America had been shelved several years earlier as having been technologically inferior and not something that would be of value to moving forward our entire electrical power grid. But with billions of dollars available, the managers of the power industry just said, great, let's grab that money and dig that old, wasted, outlived technology back and start putting it on people's houses.
I think a lot of people listening to this program for the first time, they'd be shocked to understand that this is where the money is coming from. I mean, many people I've interviewed, Jim, I don't know how much you can speak to this, they've actually said that, you know, the money that the utility companies are getting, like it's an incentive, they're getting millions, like you say, from the government, and they're getting it from the military as well. I mean, is this really true?
They are getting, the program got its jump start from getting it from the government. And that jump start was for economic reasons, not for improving the power grid reasons.
Yet that's all we hear about all the time. The utility companies are saying how this is just so wonderful. It's going to be saving us money. It's green. It's friendly for the environment. Let's talk about the conflict of interest inside these investor-owned utility business models. I think this is very important. Can we really expect utility companies to actually develop these renewable sources of clean energy? What do you think?
No, they will not do it. The business model that they have builds on their generating the power and then dishing it out, and they actually ration it out in accordance with your ability to pay, and then you pay them and you get energy from them. This is a model that actually, for all intents and purposes, comes from the 19th century, not even the 20th century, in terms of concept. And what happens is they cannot absorb into their business model any efficient generation of electricity. So, for example, back at in the 1970s, when the whole use of energy got brought into a conservation mode, point was a very simple point, and that was that for a dollar of new generation, you would generate one-fifth the amount of a dollar spent for conservation. That is, a dollar spent on conserving energy would say it would be five times more efficient in the grid than a dollar spent on energy. new energy generation. When the conservation mechanisms went into force and we started lowering our use of electricity, the electrical companies then raised the price of their energy they supplied by each increment. So you ended up saving energy but spending as much or more money. This concept is built right into the business model, and it's a bad business model. I mean, it leads us to constantly wanting to increase the amount of generation that we have. And it does not, and we talk about, when you talk about generating new energy from new sources, and that would be like, for example, wind and solar, just for example, or geothermal, when you start talking about those things, that doesn't even bring into account the fact that the transmission wires that we use probably lose 50% or more of the energy during the transmission, and virtually no effort has gone into saving that energy. The reason that they don't save energy is because the model is built around the more energy you send out, the more money you bring in. And that's a serious, serious problem.
Jim, I've heard you talk about this many times before, and I think it's really worthwhile that we take a couple minutes to really get people's heads on right. And that is this idea of what you're bringing up already. People out there are so frustrated, right? They know that this system makes no sense at all. The utility companies seem to be always lying on the websites, in public hearings. They talk about how we're looking to be more efficient. We're looking to deliver more power for less money. You'll save money. It's earth friendly. On and on and on. All of these lies. But what you just outlined is a really simple concept that I think will help people to be less frustrated. And that's this idea that most companies we're talking about, including utility companies, really are in the business of delivering the cheapest product possible and to be able to charge as much money as possible. So when people are listening to this program saying, why on earth haven't we solved the energy crisis? It's because if we're looking to these companies to solve the problem, they never will because it's against their interests. Wouldn't you agree with that statement?
Oh, absolutely. To recap what you just said, the businessman that gets the award for best businessman of the year is the one who sells the cheapest product he can find at the highest price he can get. That's the measure of success in our system, and it's across the board, not only energy, but across the board. The cheapest product for the highest price, and that is what we have designed to reward people. Now, that leads to some very interesting things in the energy grid area. So, for example, the rooftop solar movement is gaining momentum. It's being very successful in Germany. People might want to Google that for Germany and see what kind of success it's having there. They've already policy-wise said they're going to get rid of their nuclear generation, and they really are going to renewables as a primary source of generation. Here in this country, a movement has been underway for a number of years where if you do actually do rooftop generation or any other kind of generation from your house, and you generate more electricity than you need, it goes back into the grid, and then they pay you. That's a very interesting and powerful way of competing with the current inefficiencies of the current system. However, rather than embracing this kind of an approach, the energy companies have gone to state legislatures across the country and asked them, first of all, to require anybody who is going to do that to pay a hookup fee, to pay an amount of dollars to hook up to the grid with their solar generation capability. And then secondly, to reduce the amount of money that you're paid for unit of electricity generated from your home, reduce it below what's sufficient for actually selling that electricity back to the companies. Basically, what they're trying to do is get state laws passed to squeeze off the economic value to the individual household of generating its own energy and selling back the excess into the grid. This is like a knee-jerk response inside the electrical utilities and frankly, inside many other companies in our society. The idea is that competition will come from companies like wind and solar that will build their networks and will try to push the coal-powered and carbon-powered energies offline and take over. That's a highly inefficient way of running the entire grid. It would be better if you dispersed generation out to as many individual nodes as you could out at the end of the grid and have them generate back in and be paid for that. I'm pretty sure that in the long run, that's the direction things will go. Think of it this way. Before you had a cell phone, you had a household phone, and everything that was done in the household phone, in the phone system, was done through the household phone or the business phone. And you went to the phone and made your calls, and then they went through the wires that were owned by the phone company, and they got to bill you for every ounce of energy that you put through the wires. But what's happening, what's happened already in the cell phone area is that that's all been bypassed. And AT&T was on notice way back in the 70s that this was going to happen, but they tried in all kinds of ways to block the expansion of that system. And they failed, and they went out of business. There's no AT&T now. That company named AT&T was purchased by Singular, and the guy that purchased it said the only thing he ever liked about AT&T was the name, so he changed the name of his company to AT&T. But it bypassed this idea of a central switching system and wires and having the household be at the end of something that it paid from which it paid to receive things. That whole idea was bypassed by the cell phone. You could, and so each individual now walks around as their own kind of generator of information into the grid. The household that we live in now could easily be the generator of the electricity that we need to run this society. And incidentally, there's another interesting problem, and that is that the centralized grid does not have the capacity to generate as much of the electricity as we need as our society moves forward toward things like electric cars and other heavy users of electricity. We're going to need to have a far more dispersed, far more capable of generation system to make our whole society be able to be properly served by energy. None of that is of interest to the energy companies. They want to hang on to their wires and their grid and force everything through that, and then force everyone to pay for using their wires.
Clearly, what we're discussing here is the idea that we're seeing a broken system, people trying to hang on, entities, big corporations obviously trying to hang on to preserve their profits and to, of course, make a lot more. In shifting gears, Jim, let's talk about these smart meters, which have got a lot of people very hot, very upset about this issue. Many people never want to see a smart meter on their home, so they accept this opt-out offer made by utility companies where they pay money to prevent an installation. What do you think about this idea? I mean, to me, it sounds like extortion. You know, you either want this thing that you don't want, or, you know, if you don't want it, all right, you got to give me some money.
Well, it is extortion, and it's worse than extortion. It's trespass. It's appropriation of personal property. It's undermining your own security. It's creating a drain on your household financially. I attended a meeting at the Brookings Institution here about a month ago, maybe a little longer, about the power grid. Brookings is one of the think tanks. It's one of the sort of moderate, middle of the road think tanks here, and they had three major players in the power world talking. One was former head of Duke Power. One was head of a power cooperative in the Midwest, and one was a former regulator from Colorado. They were all very well-respected individuals. And what they were coping with is that the profitability of electricity moving from the center to the periphery has gone so far down that they're now making about 1% on the sales that they make at the household or at the business. And they can't sustain their business on that. So what they talked about doing was going from the outside of the house to the inside of the house and gathering up income by gathering up data and information inside the house. So what the smart meter does, and I don't think that's a peripheral to what we were talking about at all. I think it's right at the core. The smart meter is like the little nail that's driven into the heart of the system to suck all the money and all the energy out of the household back into the corporation. And you know that there's something wrong with it because they do it by stealth. They sneak up on your house, take off the old meter and put on the new one. Don't tell you it's going to happen. They just do it. And then you're sitting there. And in fact, one family in Chicago, outside of Chicago, actually had stood at the gate of their house trying to keep the company out. And the company came in with the police. And the family was arrested. The members of the family standing there were arrested. And a power company guys came in and, among other things, destroyed the flowers and foliage that was around the house where they were going to put the meter. There's no respect at all for any individual or rights of the individual. And these companies move with the power of the state. They go and get a piece of legislation of some kind. We have it here in D.C. saying that you as a citizen are required to allow them to put this meter on. We don't believe that that legislation says it has to be a smart meter. We think a meter that was not a wireless meter, but a meter that actually was one that you came and read and wrote the material down would meet the needs of what that law says. But that's a huge fight. And we have a situation here now where in the District of Columbia, for example, we do not have the right to opt out. And they're now sending out notices saying if you don't, a certain percentage, maybe 10 or 15% of the meters are inside people's houses. And so they want to go inside the house. And they can't get inside the house without you unlocking the door. They haven't gotten to the point yet of knocking the door down and going in. But they would love to do that if they could, it appears. And so what they have now is they're sending letters out saying if you do not let us in the house to change the meter, we will cut off your electricity. So that's currently a battle that's being fought. The smart meter itself does nothing to help the consumer, nothing. And it does pose a series of potential problems for the consumer. First of all, there's the problem of whatever the EMF is doing to people, particularly those who are EMF sensitive. This thing broadcasts perhaps 300,000 times a day, and it sends bolts of energy into the household, into the people in the house, and so forth. A number of these meters have been put into houses and caused fires. Interestingly enough, the company's reaction to that is it's not our meter that caused the fire. It's the old wiring in the houses. They have these meters being put in by people who aren't even electricians. They're basically handymen for all intents and purposes. They don't even, in many, many instances, they don't even shut the power off in the house. In fact, it's not easy to shut the power off in the house. It's often a fact that the meter's on the outside, but the on-off switch for the house is on the inside, for the power in the house is on the inside. So they are putting these meters on without even turning the electricity off. Then they go along, and in addition to that, they argue, as a part of that, they argue that the reason the fire broke out was because the wiring in the house was bad, not because the meter was bad. So here you have a situation where a perfectly good analog meter is working away every day, no fire. They come, take the old meter away, put a new meter on, a house breaks out in a fire, and they say it's not our meter that did it, it's the wiring in the house. It's this kind of thinking that underlies everything that these companies are doing. And it's a bad system. When you go and look at the web on the German situation, you'll find that they're moving in a completely different direction on much of these issues and talking about why this centralized system and using these kinds of meters and this kind of approach is not the proper way to approach the issue of the energy needs for the 21st century.
I want to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. When you read carefully and you read the utility companies talking about how this is going to allow consumers to be able to view online, like they can go to a computer screen and see how much they use their energy and what time of the day they use their energy, and they're actually claiming that this is somehow a way that we're going to be cutting down on energy usage. Now, come on, that sounds real fishy to me. It's 100 degrees out, and you're using your air conditioner in the middle of the day, I guess they suppose that's a really good thing that you have a smart meter on your house now. You can go to your computer and see, well, you're using your air conditioner during the day. You really shouldn't do that. Maybe you should use it in the winter time when you don't need it as much. And this way you'll save money throughout the year. This is what they're proposing as their new system with all the technology, all the PhDs, all the research out there. This is what they're proposing as a way of us conserving energy?
That's their proposal, and I say, sort of a spoofing kind of way, but I say, look, no more national holidays. When we all get together at Thanksgiving and all use our stoves and we all gather together and we all put our heat on and we all work really, really hard as an entire country, that's going to run the electricity costs up because that's going to be a high-use day. So what we're going to have to do is sort of assign times to have Thanksgiving dinner. You know, this group will have it at 10 in the morning and this group at noon and another group at 2 and so on, and that way we can keep our energy costs even. And they live in some kind of a fantasy world that's bound together by their own lives and the own way they talk about things, not have anything to do with the people they serve. The argument they made was, At this presentation that was conducted at the Brookings Institution, the leaders of the these three leaders of the power generation industry said that there was no more money to be made bringing electricity up to the house. What they needed to do was to get money inside the house. So what they're going after is not so much that you'll shift your use from the peak hours. That's not really what they're after. What they're after is charging you for those peak hours so that they can get more money. They're after getting a lot of consumption data so they can sell that to people who are selling products. They can tell you what, for example, one of the things they said is that efficiencies in refrigerators have gotten so effective that you can run a refrigerator for less than you run a light bulb in terms of electricity. So there's no money to be made there because the refrigerator is not using electricity anymore. But if they can figure out what kinds of things you use in your house, when you use them, what hours you use them at, if they can figure out, for example, when the TV is on, which they can, then they can start selling that data to people who want to advertise on TV. And they're doing that. That's their plan. Their plan is to dig out data from the households and use that to sell to companies to exploit for selling their products. This is an effort of a business model to preserve itself. It's not about providing energy. It's about preserving a business model. And what's interesting to me, frankly, is that I had the opportunity to address a series of meetings of AT&T executives back in 1982, 81, 2, and 3, in that period, because they were under heavy, heavy pressure from the shifts in consumer usage of the phone and the way the regulators were looking at that. And AT&T was under heavy pressure, so I gave a lecture three times a month for about 2.5 years to 30 at a time senior AT&T executives. And the point I kept making to them was, if they didn't figure out how to deal with the consumer's interest in using telecommunication services, they could wake up and be out of business. And it was very interesting to me early in 2003 or 2004 when the newspapers announced that AT&T had gone out of business. The power of these forces that these guys are trying to control with the business model is way bigger than them. And the big problem for society is that as these dinosaurs begin to fall over and their tails keep flicking around, a lot of damage can be done. If everyone worked together with the utility companies and with the consumers and with the society, we could move through to a more efficient, more economically viable, more service-oriented system of supplying electrical energy to the society than we currently have, and we could move through this very disruptive period in a constructive and positive way. But the utility companies are just hanging on by their fingernails, kicking and screaming and arguing that they should be rewarded and they should have money and they should be kept alive and their business model should be fed. And while doing that, they're invading the privacy of the consumer. They're costing the consumer money. They're creating health problems for the consumer. You put all of this together, and there are more problems. That's not all of them. You put this all together, and you have really an assault on the household by the electric industry.
Yeah, I mean, aside from the personal health issues, which are definitely there for many people across the United States and even around the world that are reporting how they're very sensitive to these electromagnetic frequencies and this pollution, this smog that is literally taking over the house, let's just talk again for a couple minutes about some of the people out there listening. What are you talking about? Spying on personal activities in a home? They can actually find out how much time I watch television or when I'm using my refrigerator and dishwasher. Jim, how on earth can something like this happen? I think we need to explain a little bit more that where we are heading with this. This is a new frontier. Like you say, this is the effort for the electrical, or I should say the energy industry, to try to make more and more money from the millions of people, billions of people all around the world, that they want to have these digital devices in all the units in our home. They're all going to be wirelessly transmitting our data when we open up a refrigerator, when we close it. I mean, talk about that a little bit more, how all of this communication is literally a wireless grid.
That is the direction that they want to go. They want to track every minute of everybody's usage so they can figure out how to, as they put it, meter it. How do they put a meter on our behavior? If they could put a meter on our belt and mark every foot that we walk and then send us a bill, they would do it. They would send us a bill and say, we're going to charge you 2 cents for every mile that you walk. That is a business model that underlies the dynamic of the culture that we live in, and it's the backwards model. Because what should be happening is we should be, as a household, let's say, you should be receiving money for generating electricity, and they should be servants that collect the electricity sent to a central point and switched and sent out to the people that use it. That is the alternative that is coming into being, just as it came into being in the phone area. It's going to come into being in the energy area. And the notion that these companies have some kind of right to remain in existence is just nonsense. What they are doing is really, rather than extortion, it's a protection racket. It's saying, look, if you don't keep us propped up, then we're just going to close our shop and go home and you won't have any electricity. I mean, that's basically what they're saying. What we really need in the society is a solidly planned and well-executed transition from the 19th century model that we're living with to a 21st century model that we're going to go forward with.
I want to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. You know, Jim, I don't see any difference between this and when we talk about food or education. Any of these fields of work and endeavors and inventions, all of this seems to be driven by the industry that's profiting the most. And then what happens is they are advising, if you will, and I put that in quotes, all of the policymakers, and these policymakers who are supposed to be representing the people, right? Certainly in the United States, that's the way it's supposed to work. They seem to be taking the advice of all these corporations as to whether something is safe or whether something is efficient or whether something is going to be the best way to go. And I'm wondering what you would say. I can only imagine what your answer is. Do they really understand the problems associated with the future of energy and electricity? Or are they really just listening to corporations, whatever they say goes, and they're just being like, they're acting like puppets?
Well, I think the vast majority of public servants are well-intended, honest, hardworking people. However, you need to look at the situation that they're in. They are working on all kinds of issues. You ticked off a few, but it's like energy, food, health, transportation, environment. They're working on a whole range of issues, each one of those individuals. And their vote influences how each one of those issues is resolved by the society. Now, on every one of those issues, there is a well-organized, very powerful, highly articulate, well-funded voice for the status quo. So if you're going to be looking at a food question, the food industry is there. If you're going to be looking at an energy question, the energy industry is there. Different people, they walk in and they say, look, we're from the energy field. And what happens is the subject matter expertise is imbalanced away from the public servant. The public servant does not have anything like the resources to put in on any given issue that is being decided about energy, food, transportation, and so forth. The public servant, well-intended, desiring to actually make a contribution to make things better, is outgunned at every point on every issue. And yet we're here depending upon them to be the ones that make the decisions that save shape going forward in the future. My argument there, and the argument of the people we're working with, is that everyone who's a citizen out there ought to get engaged on the issue that is of interest to them and work really, really hard to get information into the hands of the public policy people that counters what these people are doing from the vested interest sector. The people who are, the assumption when we started out as a society was that the guys that got into doing energy would be motivated by doing energy as well as possible because they'd get greater rewards. But they've now decided, I mean, it's like running a race. You can win a race by running faster than the other people in the race, or you can win a race by having somebody knock down some of the people you're running against. And what they've adopted is the knockdown policy. They throw up all kinds of barriers to the people that are running against them to make it difficult for them to run the race in a fair and even way. That, for example, as I said earlier, we get a good conservation program going, people start using less energy, but instead of having their electric bills go down, they go up because the energy industry says, we're not selling enough energy, we got to have charge more per unit, and they raise the price. That's knocking down your competitor. That's not beating your competitor. And that kind of dynamic is going on just kind of generally across the society.
I don't want people to listen to this program and get overwhelmed, throw up their hands and say, oh, there's nothing we can do. You know, we just have to sort of go along with things and make the best of it. That is simply not true. And I know that's not your point. Instead of this dumb wireless grid, which we've talked about this whole time, how can we create a truly intelligent, decentralized electricity grid without invading people's privacy and endangering their lives? I mean, that's the main point here. I want to hear from you what we're for, because that's what people need to understand. What are we in favor of and what can we go after? And I'm sure we will get thousands and thousands, millions of people to go for this.
I am saying very strongly that these industries, let's just take the electrical power industry as the one we're discussing today. That industry is under enormous pressure from the dynamics of the market, the dynamics of nature, the dynamics of life. They cannot contain within this very narrow business model that they've created. They cannot contain the energy that is breaking loose. They're trying. They're coming up with all kinds of fancy things, and they're smarty pants. They're the best and the brightest, and they think up all kinds of stuff. What I'm saying is, let's use some wisdom. Let's have, rather than a smart grid, let's have a wise grid. And the people of the country are now organized in a way that's making that happen. There are increasingly households that are using solar. There are increasing storage capacities in batteries. There's increasing wind power. All of these are new technologies and new businesses that are coming online and are gradually working to the point of being economically viable. And they are now at the tipping point of viability. They are going to be in the market, and they're going to be putting huge pressure on the people who currently control the electrical power grids. Each individual person can do that work in their own lives, in their own households. And it just starts by learning. You know, go Google non-carbon power. Go Google wind power or solar power or thermal power. Google those. Look at them. See what's available in your neighborhood. Now, the next step is to break this grid up into small nodules that consist of one house or a few houses that turn into generators of electricity. We're talking about breaking the generation grid up and having the nodules at the periphery generate the electricity and send it back in and back into the center, and then they can switch it and send it back out to where it needs to go. And that would be their job. And it's a good, honorable job, and they will make good, honorable salaries doing it, and they'll have good lives. They just will not be in control of everybody's life the way they currently are. What we need to do is have the households control and own all the energy that and information and activity that's going on inside their houses. If the people in the households own the information and own the energy that's generated there and own the space that they're in and they sell it out, that will provide income to everyone in the community, and it will take it away from the centralized places that now use their excess income to control public policy. And I have to say, we're winning this battle. These people are under heavy, heavy pressure. I would have been less likely to say that maybe, you know, 20 years ago. But when I saw AT&T, when all the evidence was that AT&T was going to go down, and it did, I said, boy, the power that's loose in this society is really major. But what's happening is the public is actually on the side of the winning tide here. And each household, to the extent that they want to be involved in this or any part of it, is just become knowledgeable, look out for what's available. And in this instance, there are lots of available alternatives. Pull those alternatives together, put them in place. Yeah, sure, there's a lot of concentrated power on the other side, but that power has been being undermined systematically from these corporate centers for years, and it will continue to be.
The show was brought to you by NaturalHealth365.com. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit NaturalHealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join us next week for another great show.